This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovec on Bloomberg Radio.
Okay, so the thoughtful things take me a long time to do. I wanted to see if I could save a little time using ChatGPT. You realize right away that you can't just ask it to write a nice birthday message. You got to ask the question the right way. You got to add detail that will personalize it for you, like how long you've known the person, as well as a collection of memories you've shared together, what you did at their wedding. Still, no matter how much I tinkered with it, I got nothing that I wanted to use. And it made me think of our interview that we're doing today, because it's not just that we have to learn how to live and work with this technology. We've got to learn how to like coexist with this technology. We're not just going to be asking super smart chatbots and humanoid robots to do stuff for us.
Damn.
And that's exactly the point of the
next. I was kind of hoping.
Yeah, I know. You know what? It turns out?
What?
It's easier to write a message from the heart than from the cloud.
Okay? All right. So this is very nicely timed.
Thank you.
All right. Anyway, basically how we're going to live with AI. This is the focus of a new book from Ethan Mollick, professor of management at Wharton. The new book is called Co-Intelligence, Living and Working with AI. Professor Mollick joining us from Philadelphia. Welcome to Bloomberg Business Week. Get to it. How are you thinking about how we will live and work with AI? Because we're spending a lot of time talking about it and dreaming, guessing, keeping our fingers crossed. But how are you thinking about it?
I like get right to it. That sounds like how a lot of people talk to AI. Please, no chit chat. Just get going. And we can talk more about your prompting technique in a bit. But part of what is really interesting is if you look, there's already big effects. So I did a big study with a bunch of my colleagues at Harvard and MIT and Warwick, where we went to Boston Consulting Group, the big consulting company, and we gave 8% of the global workforce, half got GPT-4 to use, half didn't. And they got a 40% improvement in performance just from using AI, and did work 26% faster. So like, it's already here and making an impact. It's just different in different places.
So let's talk about prompting technique here, because I think that's what the experience that a lot of people listening or watching right now might have with AI as we know it right now might be the idea of using these chatbots and not necessarily using them for any functional purpose apart from just kind of playing with them and figuring things out. But let's talk prompting technique, because I feel like this is something that you actually have to learn.
So a little bit. I mean, there actually is one piece of advice that I would ask you if, you know, from your story, which is it turns out there's a huge difference between what's called the frontier model, the largest, most advanced chatbots, which are also the most expensive to run. There's only three of them right now in the world, these frontier models, which is Claude 3, GPT-4, and Google's Gemini Advanced. And those models and the sort of free models that are out there. So if you ask one of the more advanced models, they require less prompting and produce much more impressive work. But
so if you're going to prompt an AI, I should have paid for it.
You got to pay for it. You can actually get access for free through Microsoft stuff if you turn on the purple creative mode in Microsoft Copilot. That's a hint.
Okay.
The main thing you want to do to start prompting the AI is tell it who it is. You are a great writer of greeting cards. And then I love the other piece of context you're going to provide as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So I didn't know that you have to sort of identify yourself with this stuff. But like I said, it's like you... Carol,
but would
have
you have
learn.
Identified yourself as a great creator of greeting
no,
cards?
No, but I would have said like, you know, I'm a pretty good writer.
I would tell it that it's like, a great writer of business, of car. You want to tell it what it does.
Oh, okay. I see.
You know, it's interesting. So
I see. Did you hear that, Carol? You have to tell it what it does. You are a great writer.
Yes. So okay. You need to
thank
stroke. Hey, we women are really good at stroking and like making like, you know, guys feel like they're the best about everything. So we know how to do this. We'll be good with ChatGPT. But Ethan, seriously though, I'm just having some fun. But is it really just about ChatGPTs? I mean, is that going to be our world when we think about generative AI, machine learning, or is it something much bigger than that?
It is a lot bigger. Chatbots are one way to talk with these large language models, but one of the things that you're going to be seeing a lot of this year and I've already been playing with are the idea of agents. So autonomous systems, basically, where you tell the AI do something. I've already been playing with an early version called Devin, which is based on GPT-4, but Devin works like a software engineer. You say, create a website about this, and then Devin quietly goes off and sets up a plan and builds a website for you and then tells you when it's done. So we're going to start seeing all kinds of ways of interacting with these systems, not just sort of chatbots the way you have already.
Okay, that is where I see a real innovation.
Productivity, man.
Yeah, is this idea, and it's actually kind of ironic because, you know, a few years ago, a lot of people were taught, okay, hey, go learn to code. Coding is where is a job that will be safe. But what I see, so Ethan, happening, and correct me if I'm wrong, is this idea of prompting some of these tools to create things for you that previously computer coders would have had to create. Are those jobs? Those jobs seem to be really, really at risk.
Well, it's an interesting thing. I don't code in Python. I maybe do 300 Python programs a week right now, thanks to ChatGPT doing it for me.
Wow.
So I use software for all kinds of things I wouldn't before. I think that what we usually see with a job like this is like when spreadsheet software came out, accountants didn't lose their jobs. They just shifted to doing more interesting work and not just doing, you know, handwriting math problems all day. And I think there's still a lot of room for coders. It's just a higher level of work.
I love these, what, you have four principles, is it right, for thinking about AI. Principle one, always invite AI to the table. Walk us through the rest of them. I'm trying to go through it here.
Sure, yeah. So the first one is always invite AI to the table. Nobody knows how AI is going to be useful for your job as, say, a Bloomberg radio host, because no one's ever figured it out before. If you use it for everything that you ethically and legally can, you're going to find out what it's good or bad at, and you might be surprised by what it's good or bad at. The second principle is be the human in the loop. As AI does more and more stuff for us, we want to figure out what we do uniquely that's human. Because whatever you're good at, you're almost certainly better than AI. You want to double down on those things. The third thing is, just like we talked about, treat the AI like a person and tell it what kind of person it is. And you get most of the way there to early prompting. And the fourth and sort of most ominous or interesting is, this is the worst AI you're ever going to use.
So it's just going to get better, you mean?
Yes, the stuff that's coming is going to make this stuff look much less interesting.
Can you describe, like, what's the world? Like, give me, I don't know, is it 2 years, 3 years, 4 years? Like, what is our world like where AI, generative AI, machine learning, chatbots, I guess, if you will, is such a big part of our world? Like, I get up in the morning and I do what? I mean, I'm already talking to Google Home. I'm already talking to different things. Like, how is it? How does it change
our world?
Yeah,
it's a good question. A lot of that depends on how fast and how long this technology develops, and nobody knows the answer, right? Keep in mind that OpenAI is explicitly trying to build an artificial general intelligence, a machine smarter than a human, in the next few years. So let's assume that doesn't happen, right? Then I think, you know, we are going to see a bunch of stuff already baked into our current versions of AI. So I think people are already forming relationships with AI chatbots. They're going to view them as friends or people they talk to. I think your Siri and your Google Home are going to become much smarter and know what you actually want to accomplish during the day and just do the work for you. I think we're going to be working as co-intelligences with AI that'll help us generate ideas and help us do the boring parts of work. So I think, you know, there's going to be positives and negatives of this vision.
How do we make it so, I'm not just talking about Carol and me, but how do we prepare ourselves, how do we prepare our kids for this world?
Smart.
So I think that the main thing to do is to use this. I think a lot of people are waiting for instructions, and those aren't kind of forthcoming. Like, nobody has answers for you. So I talk to all the AI labs all the time. You know,
like,
that's
good
or
bad.
Kids,
but we don't want our kids going, hey, write me, you know, write my essay. Right, exactly.
So school is an interesting one, right? Like, we didn't, like, I'm a professor, I'm a teacher, and like, we didn't expect all of essays to be destroyed. We'll figure it out in schools. Like, you're just going to be doing a lot more in school writing than you did before. I don't, you know, your kids can use this as a valuable companion to help them structure an argument, to have a discussion, to explain things. I know as a parent of kids, frequently I have, like, there's that math problem you have to help with. I don't remember how that math works, so I ask the AI to explain to me how to do it. So I've become much better at explaining
stuff.
You
can't remember, and you have a PhD.
Listen, we've already been sending our kids to Khan Academy or another things. Like, so this is just another step. I do need to ask you, though, how does it affect the financial community? Because every conference and event that's coming up, pick your industry, they are looking at how AI is going to impact them. How does it impact the financial community and investing?
weirdly, finance in overall was the most impacted already by the previous forms of AI. So previous forms of AI were about how do we train a model on lots of data so it can predict the future, right, and make predictions. And we have algorithmic trading now. You know, when you go to a trading desk, it's no longer being in Wall Street where people screaming at each other. It's a couple of computers. So that industry has already been disrupted. Large language models work more like people than they do like software. So it's sort of like you add people to a team. So in finance, it's about things like, what if we have a million people doing sentiment analysis? What would you do with a million PhDs is the question right. I ask finance companies, because that's what the AI can do for you.
Hey, 30 seconds. Does anything about this technology scare you?
I think, yes. The perfect deep fakes are already here. I think that we should, you know, you shouldn't trust anything you see or hear again. This could be entirely AI generated of me. It isn't, but you wouldn't know.
All right, going to leave it there. So appreciate it. Ethan Mollick there, his new book, Co-Intelligence, Living and Working with AI.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news as it happens. Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Tim Stenebeck on Bloomberg Radio.
It is Bloomberg Business Week. That's Carol Masser. I'm Tim Stenebeck. Carol, we talked about this a few months ago. Worth revisiting. A recent TIAA Institute survey said that about 21% of Americans aged 22 to 34 said retirement is out of reach or not even part of their plan. Kind of not hard to see why. Good entry-level jobs are getting harder to come by. Student loan debt burdens are daunting. The cost of living is high.
Yeah, but what we say in surveys doesn't always reflect what we do. So for a check of what we're doing when it comes to retiring and planning for our kids' college educations, we've got a great guest. Let's bring back David Musto. He's president and CEO at the financial services company Ascensus, which handles retirement services as well as college savings plans. And it says it's the largest record-keeping services partner and third-party administrator in the company. So they see a lot. They have over $742 billion in assets under administration. And he joins us here in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker studio. You do have a great vantage point. Great to see you. How are you?
Great to see you again.
Well,
fantastic.
And how are things going? You've got a great window into a lot in terms of how people are doing, especially when it comes to retirement and savings. We talk a lot about numbers and surveys, and they look rather bleak. So tell us what you're seeing specifically.
Well, listen, it's a fact of life. There are about 25% of workers in America that don't have any retirement saving. There's about 57 million Americans that don't even have access to a workplace retirement plan. Right? So one of the things that I think all of us are focused on is creating more incentives for small businesses, mid-sized businesses to actively create workplace programs.
Right.
Because once they're in place and once people are saving on a regular basis, we know that there's much higher likelihood of long-term financial success.
What's the option for people who don't have a workplace savings plan right now? Is it just a Roth IRA?
It is some form of an IRA. Now, what certain innovative states are doing is rolling out programs which are auto IRA programs, where they're mandating within their states or requiring that any small, mid-sized business that doesn't offer a traditional 401k or defined contribution plan needs to automatically enroll their employees, their participants, into an auto IRA program. And it's actually working. We're seeing very high levels of adoption of these programs in certain states. We're seeing savers slowly but surely putting money aside and increasing contributions over time. So this is one of the ways in which we're encouraging more activity in the workplace. There's also been a variety of new legislation that is providing more tax credits, incentives, and ease of administration so that more small businesses actually adopt programs.
What else could be done that you think would move the needle more
dramatically? Well, we need to democratize financial advice and guidance. Right. One of the big.
Do you know how long we've been talking about this?
We're still working on it, Carol. and we're
well,
and
what
you know,
holds it back?
You know
what
why we're getting results, right? Yeah. And what's really coming together here is the combination of technology, alongside advisors, and human beings supporting right savers. It's not you know it's not a lot of magic here. But the main reason that people are not saving toward long-term goals is short-term financial strain, right? There's a significant issue around, you were talking about college debt. We got 43 million Americans that have some form of college debt right now, 13% of the U.S. population. So how do we help these people manage through the debt so that they can focus on the longer-term savings? How do we cut it off earlier is the other opportunity.
Well, okay, so how do we? Because it's become quite a machine in terms of the cost of education, the ability to access loans to pay for it. It's all there. Like, how do you change that nut? Like, how do you reverse it?
Yeah, so awareness, number one, 30% of Americans that could or should be saving in a college 529 program for their kids don't even know that those programs exist, don't know that they can be setting aside dollars. That
I feel
would
like it should be something when the kids are born. Like you just, like
you,
it just
you
started.
You leave the hospital, you get some swaddles and like some info about a 529.
Get the car seat and you start the 529.
So, you got to buy the car seat yourself.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Kudos to the state of California. Cal Kids program, the state of California is now depositing an amount of money into every child's account born in the state of California. The census administers that program. We're happy to be, you know, thrilled to be a part of that.
That's pretty cool.
So a lot of innovation like that happening across the country.
Hey, speaking of innovation, one thing that we can do now with our phones, as we learned last year with the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, is move money very quickly. And I get the idea that if people see maybe headlines and they don't follow the markets closely, they might want to make adjustments to their 401ks. They can do that through a mobile app, but you've been able to successfully get people to think twice about reducing the amount they're putting in their 401k through their mobile app. Talk a little bit about this.
Yeah.
Because there's some psychology at play here.
Big time. Behavioral finance, right, is the buzzword. But taking advanced technology, user design, we've been able to drive 30% of the people that would come online or on an app to reduce a contribution rate in their 401k plan to actually stop them from proceeding with that transaction.
It's like a warning comes up, says, wait a second, are you sure you really want to do this?
A little bit more than that. It's a presentation of an outlook that shows how that additional, how that money, right, will impact their long-term income.
Okay.
Right, so if you reduce by $100 a month now, what's that going to mean in terms of your monthly income or your annual income when you retire? And it's enough to get people to think.
What about families? You know, I feel like we are speaking from a very privileged vantage point, if you will, whether it's companies that help us in this or whatever. But there's a lot of families out there that are just barely getting by, just not even, some would say, making a living wage. How do you help all those individuals that, like, how do you do that?
Yeah, well, and just, you know, to recognize that, I think, you know, I think there's double the number of people that have credit card debt relative to emergency savings, right? So you're tapping into a really important issue there. A big part of it is early habits. Even those that are of lower income, right, and means, need to think about sort of where and how they're placing the next dollar. And to the degree they can even set small amounts aside for that emergency fund, it's going to mean a big difference in a situation, a crisis situation in a family.
But what's your outreach to the, like, well, give me an idea on your platform. Like,
So a big opportunity is using the workplace for this.
Yeah.
It is really hard to touch thousands, right, hundreds of thousands of people across the country one by one by one. But when we have people gathered in a workplace, and we provide financial wellness counseling or advice through a benefits program,
right,
or in conjunction with a 401k program, even though they may not be ready to contribute to that long-term retirement savings goal today, we can provide education, advice, and guidance to help them consider the steps along the path to making those types of contributions.
What's a bigger crisis in this country? Is it the education cost crisis or lack of saving for retirement crisis?
Well, it depends on whose seat you sit in, but you know, both are equally important. And it's dollars today versus dollars tomorrow, but it's meaningful on both fronts. And I think it's something, it's not an and or, right? We've got to focus on both.
Should we think that we're going to get Social Security the way that earlier generations were able to?
I think that the government will find a way to extend those benefits. I suspect they'll be extended in a different way than we know them today. It's the only way the math works.
What's the responsibility of corporations? Where I think about my dad who had a pension, mm-hmm. VA benefits, investments, just different things.
Yeah.
You know, but companies, you know, there are many who've got 401k and they do matching, but what is the responsibility mm-hmm. of corporations? And forgive me, because only about 30 seconds left.
Yeah, they can be great facilitators of these programs, design programs that are set up to get employees on the right first start, first step, and continually reinforce the benefits of saving for longer term goals and objectives.
Yeah, I actually think kids should be like, I know we're not supposed to do our opinion, but I think kids should be learning about all this stuff in like grade school and middle school and high school.
Very controversial opinion, Carol. You better watch yourself.
I just think, come on. Thank you for joining us. Good to have you back. David Musto, President and Chief Executive Officer at Ascensus, joining us here in our Interactive Brokers Studio. You are listening and watching Bloomberg Business Week. Carol Masser, Tim Stenovic. This is Bloomberg.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.